we captured over 3,000 young people. This is American young people. They represent the nation. So it's a random sampling. 13 to 17 years old. The first survey was conducted July 2007 to March 2008. The categories, so they self-identified. We first asked, do you self-identify with a religious tradition? If you do, what is it? And then we clustered them. The researchers clustered them. They got a bunch of us PhDs to sit together twice a year, put us up in a nice hotel, to look at the research and make sure it's reputable, it's dependable, all right? So the first research piece that was published by Oxford University Press in 2009 based upon this data. The categories, they clustered them into mainline Protestant, conservative Protestant, black Protestant, Roman Catholic, bless you, not religious, Mormon, Jewish, more than one religion, other. So the researchers, and the leader is Christian Smith, great name for religious study. Dr. Smith now teaches. He first taught, when he started this, he was teaching at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Now he's at Notre Dame. Anyway, Dr. Smith and his researchers got this major grant, $15 million. By the way, there are two women who are paid full-time who go into the office every single day in South Bend, Indiana, and their job is once every 2.5 weeks to contact these 3,000 young adults now because they follow them. I was talking to one of them, and one of them said, you know, I talk to these young people more than I talk to my own children. Because their job is to make sure they have their data so that when we launch the next survey, we can capture the group, right? So the first survey started in 2007 to 2008. Categories. So who is the mainline Protestant category? Good. Methodists, Presbyterians, Lutherans, Episcopalians. Depends on the... yeah, good point. Depends on the kind of Baptist. What kind of Baptist? There was Baptists in the main... Yeah, the Americans, the northern ones, the weirdos. Very good. The Southern Baptists were put where? In the conservative Protestant tradition. Nicely done. Also included Disciples of Christ. Also included United Church of Christ as well, the Congregational Church. Okay. The conservative Protestants were mostly Southern Baptists, also Pentecostals, etc. There were black Protestant. These are the historic black churches in the United States, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the AME Zion Church, the Christian Methodist Episcopal Church, etc. Roman Catholic was a category by themselves, not religious, Mormon, Jewish, more than one religion, other. Okay, so I'm just giving you the mainline Protestant sampling. I can pull out Presbyterian, but I thought since I'm coming to Epworth, I should look at the mainline Protestant sampling. So I'm giving you 13 questions. Mainline Protestants. Among mainline Protestant young people, keep in mind they're 13 to 17 years old. What percent of mainline Protestant young people believe in God? 96, 86, 76. You're trying to predict what you think is the correct answer. If you think it's 96% believe in God, raise your hand. Good job. 86%. 76%. Really? You skeptics. You just made Jesus cry right now. 86%. Second question. What percent of mainline Protestant youth believe in a judgment day when God will reward some and punish others? A judgment day is coming when God will reward some and punish others. 83, 73, 63. Really? If you think 83, raise your hand. Oh, good. One of you is hopeful and going to see Jesus. Good. 73. 63? Rats. Who is higher in the sampling? Other groups. Yeah, the conservative Protestants. Southern Baptists were way high. Who else was high? Do you know? Catholics were also very high. Roman Catholics also were very high at Judgment Day. Three, what percent of mainline Protestant youth definitely believe in the presence of angels? Definitely. They're angels, and they're at work in the world. 79, 69, 59. 79%. 69. 59. Really? Wow. Who was higher? Catholics. Roman Catholics were higher, but not that high. Interesting. They were not much higher than we were. Mormons were the number one because the angel, every Mormon temple in the world, gold on top. The angel Moroni, who appeared to Joseph Smith in the field in upstate New York and delivered the Book of Mormon. Their church wouldn't exist without an angel. We did ask young people also about the presence of Satan or the devil. Did more mainline Protestant young people say there were angels or there was the devil? Hands down, it was angels. They were very skeptical that there was a person of the devil or Satan. Okay? What percent of mainline Protestant youth have made a personal commitment to live life for God? So the question was, have you made a personal commitment to live life for God? Typical of 13 to 17-year-olds, their first question back to the researcher was, what do you mean by that? The researcher said back to the young person, whatever you think that means. Because you get this, right? As soon as we define it, then we skew the research. So whatever the kid thought, whatever the young person thought, right? 70, 60, 50% have made said they have made a personal commitment to live life for God. 70, 60, 50. See? Better than some of you expected. 60%. 5, what percent of mainline Protestant youth have had an experience of worship that was very moving and powerful? We asked, have you had an experience of worship that was very moving and powerful? 74, 64, 54. What do you think, Bonnie?
I was hoping for 64.
Oh, good. Bonnie's hopeful for 64. Todd, what do you think?
Because it's an emotional time.
Yeah. Oh, well done. Gosh, Bonnie, that's brilliant. Bonnie just said it's an emotional time. You know this, right? And this is God's doing, and this is wrong. So when you die and go to heaven, you can say to God, that was stupid, okay? We know that by 11 to 12 years old, the emotional center of an adolescent's brain is fully developed. The emotions are fully developed. So when she says or he says to you, I love her, or I love him, guess what? They do. And you're like, that's so cute, sweetheart. You have no idea what love is. Wrong. You are wrong. Neuroscience says that they love and hate and are angry and feel and are depressed the way they're going to be as an adult. The problem is, put your hand right here on the top of your head. This is called? Yeah, well done. This is called the prefrontal cerebral cortex, right? This is where all executive functions happen, right? Like what?
Decision-making,
impulse control, etc., right? Hypothetical reasoning. Gee, if I do this, this might happen. If I don't do this, if I sleep in and don't go to class when I'm in first year at college, right? What would happen to me kind of thing, right? The problem is we know now this doesn't develop. Young women develop faster. The prefrontal cerebral cortex develops faster, completes at about, we're looking at 19, 20 years old for young men. They keep on pushing it, 25, 26. So this is stupid. This was stupid of you. So emotions are fully developed. Reasoning is? I was reading this thinking, God, why couldn't you reverse that? Okay, let's reason and then feel stuff later, right?
So we should not send our children to college at 18.
Exactly. Oh, man. Thank you, Reverend. Exactly. Exactly, exactly. So Bonnie, you're so good. Bonnie said they can. This is emotion. They can feel this. 74, 64, 54. 74? 64. 54. I know. Interestingly enough, we follow up, right? So you follow up when the data surprises you, you follow up. And so we ask questions. And a number of them said they did have or they've had an experience that was very moving and powerful. Where? Not in their regular church. Where was it? Yeah, youth group or retreat or conference. Or camp, or mission trip, that's when they felt something really extraordinary. Every Sunday, not so much, okay? 6, what percent of mainline Protestant young people pray alone at least once a day? Pray alone at least once a day. And again, whatever they assigned prayer was. Oh, and this took place, the survey was over a course of 18 months. So it wasn't just during finals, okay? Right? Or before the prom. Please, let her say yes, Jesus, please, right? So it's over the course of a year and a half, okay? 52, 42, 32, 52% pray alone at least once a day. 42. 32? Yeah. Okay. 7. What percent of mainline Protestant young people had a family that prayed regularly before or after meals? Had a family that prayed regularly before or after meals. Inherent in the question is you have a family that, yeah, sits together and actually eats together, right? According to Gallup, 3 years ago, 2007, yeah, 3 years ago, 2014, Gallup's National Survey of Young People, they asked 16-year-olds during the course of the week, how many meals do you sit down and eat with your family? Gallup asked 16-year-olds across the United States, how many meals during the course of the week do you sit down and eat with your family? It was 2. National average was 2, okay? What percent of mainline Protestant young people pray, had a family that prayed regularly before or after meals? 74, 54, 34. 74, 54, 34. Yep. 8, what percent of school attending mainline Protestant youth openly express their faith at school among their peers, a lot or some? Predicated upon this question is that they have to actually be going to school. Fastest growing schooling trend in America is, thank you, is homeschooling. State that leads the nation in homeschooling. Do you know? Not Utah. Utah would not. Their schools are actually very populated by public schools are very populated. Do you know? North Carolina leads the nation in homeschooling. 63, 53, 43. 63% said openly expressed their faith at school among their peers a lot or some. 53, 43, 63%. 53, 43. Oh man, golly, you're good. 9, then what percent of school attending mainline Protestant youth felt pressured or made fun of because of their religious beliefs and practices a lot or some at school? Made fun of. 25, 15, 5. 25. 15, 5. Two groups emerged and said that they get made fun of, and they weren't mainline Protestant youth. Who were they? Jewish and Mormon. Those were the two. Well done. Those were the two. Jewish and Mormon young people. Okay, and not Mormon young people who lived in southern Idaho, Nevada, and Utah, but other parts of the country they felt made fun of. ACLU says hate crimes in the United States last year, the majority of hate, 52% of the hate crimes were assigned to anti-Semitism. Wasn't anti-gay, wasn't black, wasn't, it's anti-Semitic. And it's on the rise, it's increasing. Okay? 10, what percent of mainline Protestant young people reported that their congregation was rarely or never boring? Hey, be nice, be nice. 64, 44, 24. Our congregation rarely or never boring. 64. Oh, come on. We're trying. Thank you, see? 44. Really? Jane, you're so hopeful. Two of you. 24. Look at that. 44% said our congregation is rarely or never boring. So this was higher than we expected. And go. It would be other. So, because they're independent, et cetera, and they wouldn't identify with a denominational affiliation, so it'd be other. And actually in the sampling, and it was interesting to us, we thought there would be much more of a rigorous sampling of these independent non-denominational churches, and they didn't show up in huge numbers. So it's still a phenomenon that's relatively new among young people in the United States. Good question, thank you. 10, 44%. Couple more, 11. What percent of mainline Protestant you said they had adults in their congregation other than family members with whom they enjoyed talking and who gave lots of encouragement? 84, 54, 34. In their congregation, there are adults other than their family who enjoy they enjoy talking to and who encourage them a lot. 84, 54, 34. 84%. Really? Wow. 54, 34. Mainline Protestants were the highest in the sampling. Two groups, Presbyterians and United Methodists, were at 84%.
Youth groups.
Youth ministry. But it was that. It was youth advisors, for instance. But more than that, the stories were coming from small churches also where there was no active youth group. They said, yeah, this old lady or this guy or whatever, I talked last night a story about Janet in Vespers. When I preached yesterday, I preached about September 11th, right? The Presbyterian Church of Tenafly is just across the George Washington Bridge from Manhattan. And they lost 7 members of their church on the towers that went down. Okay, 4 of them are elders. For Presbyterians, that's leaders in the church. 4 of them are elders. One of them is the father of Kyle. When Kyle turned 17, this is 3 years ago, and was getting ready to go to college, he asked the pastor, Eileen, who's a friend of mine, could I speak to the congregation? And she said, sweetheart, sure. And Eileen was the one that told Kyle about his dad being missing when he was a little guy. He's five. Anyway, so he gets up and he's getting ready to go to college, and he got up and said, I just want you to know how much I appreciate all of you and love all of you, and how much you've cared for my mom and my sister and me when dad died on September 11th. And then he named people, and Eileen said, it just was amazing. He named people and he said, Mr. So-and-so, you taught me to tie a tie on my first junior prom. And then he said, and Mrs., you helped me learn how to drive, because mom can't do that, because she'd be way too weird. But he went through the congregation and named adults in the congregation who had stepped in, and Eileen said, she was going to preach afterwards, and she goes, okay, well, that was kind of the word of the Lord. But Eileen got up and said, you fulfilled your baptismal vows to Kyle. When he was an infant and you baptized him, you promised to raise him up to know who Jesus Christ is. And look what you've done. And people were like, we were just doing what we're supposed to do. And she said, that's exactly right. Right? Kyle's in the 84%. Adults other than my family members with whom I enjoy talking, who gave me lots of encouragement. 12. Percent of mainline Protestant young people said they believe that many religions may be true. Many religions could be true, not just Christianity, other religions besides Christianity. 77, 67, 57. 77. Wow. 67. 57. We were high. We weren't the highest. Do you know who was higher than we were? Mainline Protestants? One group. Just a little bit higher. No, they would be in the Episcopalians are in the mainline Protestant group. Nope, Catholics were not. Someone said Jewish. Because Jews have the highest intermarriage rate. They're marrying non-Jews. And so a lot of the Jewish young people are saying, you know, my dad's a Methodist and my mom's Jewish. And we go back and forth in temple and church. So I think, yeah, I can't just say Judaism is the only way or Christianity is the only way. I don't want to shut out mom, et cetera, or shut out dad. Does that make sense? 13, last one. What percent of mainline Protestant youth agreed that for believers to be truly religious and spiritual, not just religious only, but also spiritual, to be religious and spiritual, it needed to be involved in a congregation on a regular basis, agreed that to be a believer, religious and spiritual, you had to be in a congregation on a regular basis. 47, 37, 27. 47%. 37. 27. Yeah. What does this bode for the future? They don't have to come to church. Be religious and spiritual. Okay? We were the lowest in the sampling. The highest, Mormons. Roman Catholics were also much higher than we were. You got to go to church to be saved, right? Mainline Protestants, we were just over 27%. When we got, I was sitting next to Kenda Dean, who is a professor at Princeton Seminary, who's brilliant, and she's a United Methodist. And Kenda and I were sitting together, and we got the data, and we're like, dang it. Because if that's what they believe, if that's what we've taught them, then what does the future hold for Methodists, Episcopalians, Presbyterians, Lutherans, etc., right? They're like, eh, you can still be a relatively good believer in Christ without going to a church, okay? So the major finding of the National Study of Youth and Religion, you may have heard about this, some of you. Young people view God as a moralistic, therapeutic deity. I know, that just rolls off your tongue, doesn't it? Young people view God as a moralistic, therapeutic deity. Go ahead, ask the question. Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Good. So the deity part. A God exists who created and orders the world and watches over human life on earth. God is all-powerful, but largely out there. Okay, there is a God, 84%. Remember, mainline Protestant youth, 84%. So when someone says to you, oh, these young people, they don't believe in God, you tell them, actually, it's in the 80th percentile. They really do. They believe there's a God. They just don't think God is active in their lives, okay? So there's a deity that exists, no question. Moralistic, therapeutic deity, right? The moralistic deity. God wants people to be good, nice, and fair to one another as taught in the Bible and most world religions. Good people go to heaven, bad people, oh dear. I know. Melody, I'm sorry. Reverend, I'm sorry. I don't know how that got in there. That is terrible. See? That's right. That's right. My case is rested with you people. Thank you. Our pastor got her degree in divinity from Duke Divinity School. Right. They worship Satan there. And he's blue. Okay. Oh, you see? See? You know, God hates idolatry, Reverend. You know that. There's a moralistic deity, right? A deity exists, and the deity is moralistic. You're supposed to be good, otherwise bad stuff happens. So in one of the follow-ups, so they don't assign me to a Presbyterian, but they flew me around the country, they flew all of us around the country to interview two or three young people to make sure we had the data correct. And I went to Boise, Idaho, and interviewed a United Methodist kid who was 18 years old, white, Boise, Idaho, duh, that's redundant, okay? United Methodist kid. And I said, so this whole God wants you to be good? And he said, dude, seriously, it's called karma. And I said, wait, you are a white United Methodist kid from Idaho. You shouldn't use karma. As an Asian American, I can use karma, but you can't use karma. And he goes, no, dude, seriously. If you're mean to people, bad stuff is going to happen to you, right? There's this sense among young people that there's karma, that, right, it comes back to bite you. Bad to people, bad stuff happens to you as well. So a moralistic side. Sorry about the Duke stuff, Melody, thank you. And then therapeutic. The central goal of life is to be happy and to feel good about oneself. God is not particularly involved in one's life except when God is needed to resolve a problem or in some inexplicable way when tragedy occurs. So moralistic, therapeutic deity. There's a God. Moralistic, you're supposed to be good, otherwise bad stuff happens to you. Therapeutic, you don't really need God until bad stuff happens. Tragedy. In most cases, we ask these 13, 14, 15-year-olds, what happened? And most of them cited when their grandmother or grandfather got ill. And then they started to pray. A couple of them had experiences, tragically, where their best friend got cancer. Then they would pray. Otherwise, basically, God, wasn't involved. They just, Jesus, Holy Spirit, nice guy, good teacher, Holy Spirit, whatever that is. But not really. Church, nice people, okay, but we were intrigued. We kept on hearing about this, the goal of life is to be happy. And we began to ask these young people, so where did you get this idea about the goal of life is to be happy? They said, no, we're supposed to be happy. And where did you get this? And we kept on asking them, and guess where they got it? Yeah.
Barney?
No, well, yeah, Barney, the big purple dinosaur. But it also came from, and you. Yes. One young woman in South Carolina said, you know, my folks all the time say, sweetheart, we just want you
to be happy.
And she said, oh, okay, cool. So you exist to make me, this is good to know. And so the world kind of exists to make me, so the church also, God must want me to be. That is not the same as abundant life. Okay? What we discovered is parents, well-meaning parents, and some of you grandparents, okay, out of retribution to your own children, okay, are throwing out all the rules and saying, sweetheart, we just want you to be happy. And they're believing you. They agree with you. They've taken that in as their reason for living, okay, as their raison d'être, right? The reason for being, okay? It's a problem. So, go ahead and ask. Thank you. The view of God as a moralistic, therapeutic deity does not place Jesus at the center. It places ourselves at the center with God orbiting around us. If the goal of life is to be happy, then it's all about me, okay? The primary goal of life is not to be happy and to feel good about oneself. The goal of life is to be a faithful follower of Jesus Christ as a response to God's amazing gift of grace. And here's the cool thing. If you do that, then you actually will be, right? But that's not the reason you're doing this. It isn't about you. It's about responding to God's grace. So lesson number one this morning, stop using that language. When you use that language, you reinforce to that teenager that they're the center of the universe. And believe me, they already get that. They're teenagers, okay? So change your language. Think about this with me. Say something different. Sweetheart, we just hope you, I just want you to what? Know Jesus. To what? Be at, oh, peace is a great word. To be at peace. To be a good person. Lovely. To what? Be, oh, golly, gratitude. To be grateful. One of my best friends on the faculty at Columbia Seminary, he's now retired, George Straub teaches theology. Whenever I would see George, I would say, Dr. Straub, how you doing? He said, still grateful. I said, thank you, George, thank you. He says, Roger, we have a lot to be grateful for, still grateful. That's his response every single time. And I thought, yeah, I want to embed that in my soul. Sweetheart, we just want you to be grateful for what you have, whole. I want you to find meaning. Honey, I want you to find meaning in your life. I want you to be fulfilled, right? That's different than being happy. You see the depth of that? And then they're gonna say, what do you mean by that? And then you have to have a conversation. Well, what do you think that means? Well, what would it take to make you whole, to make you fulfilled? Because it begins to turn them outside of themselves to think, how can they make a difference in the world to which Christ has called them, right? I think that changes things. I'll end with this. I'm gonna do one more. So then we did longitudinal survey, right? We captured them, the over 3,000. We got 97% of the original sampling in the second survey. I know, 97% because of those two women in South Bend, okay? So when we launched the second, we're in the midst of the third one right now. Now they're in their 20s. But so we got them in 2013, right? It was published. So now instead of 13 to 17, now they're upwards. The youngest were 17 and they were into their 20s. And we asked them similar kind of questions. We asked about the moralistic therapeutic deity. We asked about all kinds of other things. The major finding for this was we're looking at church attendance. We're trying to figure out, are you still in a congregation? Are you still worshiping wherever you are in the world? As a college student, as a grad student, as someone who's out of college, what are you doing? The breakdown, so the book, sorry, is titled Souls in Transition. So the first book is Soul Searching. The second book is Souls in Transition. The third book, we're not sure what it's going to be called, but souls will be in there somewhere. The breakdown was this. 15% of these young adults now, by and large, were called committed traditionalists. They were still involved in a congregational setting. I am deeply committed to the church. 30% were called selected adherents. This is not the best language. It wasn't my choice. It was Dr. Smith's choice. We raked him over the coals and said, could you use better language, easier to appropriate? Anyway, he's a researcher. Selected adherents. Church is important to me, but there are other challenges. So in their early 20s, in their mid-20s, what are some of the other challenges? Go. Job. Education, school, family, falling in love with the right person, and being married, although that's being delayed, right? You know this. The great proactive strategy of the Presbyterians and Methodists, Lutherans, Episcopalians, wait until they get married and have, then they will. What's the problem? They're not getting married and they're not having kids, or if they do, it's happening later and later, okay? So that great proactive Episcopalian evangelism strategy, okay, it is completely bankrupt, which makes Episcopalians nervous when you talk about bankruptcy in Episcopalians, okay? So get off that stupid idea that they're going to get married and have kids and come right back to us, okay? They're not. By the way, you know this. There is a correlation between educational attainment and birth rate. Not causal, thank you, Jesus, but it's correlative. The more education you have, the fewer children you have. The reason why the Episcopal Church is shrinking so fast is it's the highest educated church. It's not. There's a small group that's more educated than Episcopalians. Do you know whom? No, I thought it was Jewish also. You know, I thought it was UUA also, but they're not. You think you're smarter, but you're not. Philadelphia Yearly Meeting. The Society of Friends, the Quakers, are more educated than Episcopalians. Presbyterians are next. Methodists are down there. Your Baptists who can read. So they're down there, right? Okay. That was taped. Oh, that was bad. Anyway, sorry. That's why the Episcopal Church is shrinking faster than the rest of us because their birth rate is one of the lowest in the country because they're so highly educated. The Quakers have the lowest birth rate of a tradition because they're so highly educated, right? Selected adherence. The church is important to me, but there are other challenges like falling in love, like work, like jobs, like school, etc. 15% spiritually open. I'm spiritual, just not religious. The religiously indifferent, I just don't think it matters much to me right now. The disconnected, I don't know and don't really care. And the irreligious, I am against religion. Those are the only atheists, okay? The 10%. We're not going to get the 10%. That category number 6, the irreligious, I'm against religion. Why are they against religion? Because, yes, good job. That was the language. It's hurtful. They experienced, of the 10%, significant numbers of them had been in church, but they encountered a church split or a church fight, and their mom and dad were told that they're of Satan, and their family left, and they said, we're done. If that's how church people behave, we're done. I'm not going back again. Even though their parents would return to a different church, they're like, I'm over it. Some of them were gay and lesbian young people who were told that you're going to hell because of who you love, et cetera. They said, I'm out. We're not doing this anymore, kind of thing. So the 10%, we're not going to get 10%. We're going to have a hard time with the disconnected, the 25%, I don't really get. But we're looking at the 45%, the 15% traditionalists, and the selected adherents. We're trying to figure out, so what made 45% of these young adults still be involved in a congregational setting? It may not be the church of their origin, of growing up, but they're involved somehow. Wherever they moved or wherever they're working or going to school, they thought it was really important. So we're trying to figure out what made them be that 45%. That was the major question as we begin to do the research, okay? So six factors showed up as huge to get to the selected adherents and the committed traditionalists. Six factors. Bottom right corner, when they were a teenager in the original sampling, if they said they had fewer serious doubts about religious beliefs, they tended to make it into committed traditionalists or selected adherents. They can have doubts, but they weren't serious. Bottom center, if they frequently prayed and read the Bible when they were an adolescent, then they tended to be a committed traditionalist or selected adherent in that 45%. Bottom left, if they had many adults to turn to for support and help, then they tended to be a committed traditionalist, selected adherent. Top left, if they had high parental religious service and attendance and importance of faith, if they saw their parents doing faithful things, step-parents, parents, key caregivers doing faithful things, they tended to be selected adherents, committed traditionalists. Top center, if as a teenager they ranked faith as really important to them, they tended to be in church. And top right, if they had many personal religious experiences, whatever those were, they tended to be still in a church when they were young adults. If you think this is important, okay? So, of those six, what intrigued us was we begin to value them and research those more deeply and talk to these young adults and say, so what did you mean by these? We discovered one of them carried more weight than anything else. Parents. Top left, right? This whole idea of the whole parental religious service and attendance and importance of faith, that carried more weight than everything else. More than youth group. More than coming to worship on a regular basis. More than a mission trip. More than going to conference. If they experienced their parents doing faithful things as a regular part of the routine, that showed up as huge. It's making, I presented this data when I first came on staff at my church and Village Church. We're reshifting our children's, youth, and young adult ministry to look at how we work with our parents. We're trying to support our parents and caregivers on everything because my youth ministry pastor, who I adore, Zach, was like, so you're saying everything I'm doing is worthless? And I'm, no, it's not worthless. But I'm saying for confirmation, we are really effective at our church. We confirmed 52 15-year-olds in May, 52. And I said, Zach, by the data that I'm seeing, in a year, 3/4 will be gone. They're still on our rolls, but they're not gonna show up in church. Unless during the confirmation journey, we get their parents involved. He's like, so I'm doing confirmation for parents and for young people? I'm saying, yeah. It's got to be dual because they can reinforce each other. Otherwise, yeah, we can confirm them. We can confirm them right out of the church, right? Which is not very faithful, not very effective. So it's the parent stuff. Why? Role models, exactly right. It's the language that they use, right? They know, please. Oh, interesting. So we've done some work on the gender issue, right? Thank you. There are a number of families, especially in the historic Black churches, the matriarchs are huge, right? Their power is incredible. And the loss of fathers in the African-American community is tragic. We haven't surfaced that as much in our data. But you're right. I think fathers make a big difference as well. Seeing their dad... Yep. Right. It makes a difference when both parents are there. You're right. There's no question. It reinforces each other. That's really important. But thank you. We haven't seen as much, but we've seen that, it just parent. Why? Why are you so important? Please. It's the first community. Exactly right. I mean, it's the place of nurture, okay? So the reinforcing of parents, it just shows up as huge. It's just incredibly, incredibly valuable. Please. Yeah, And if you ever meet mom, I preached yesterday, and mom, one of mom's phrases is, if it doesn't work at home, it doesn't work. And if you ever meet her and you tell her that I told you that, she'd be way too pleased. So do not tell her that. I love her and adore her. She got it. She's right. It's our first community, right? It's what shapes and nurtures us. That's why when you're in therapy, you spend a lot of time unpacking your family stuff. You're like, can we talk about now? But now I realize, right, in therapeutic work, they're trying to figure out what got you to be where you are, for better or for worse. And they're trying to figure out questions about family stuff. So the parent stuff is really huge. This gets a little precarious. So then I asked, we were listening to the data when it first started to come out, surface, and I asked Christian and his other researchers, well, I've got a lot of grandparents, well-meaning grandparents who pick up their grandkids because the parents aren't going to do it and bring them to church. That's great, isn't it? And Kristen said, that's lovely, Roger. So the message those young people are getting is, churches for whom? Old people and children. So as soon as they get old enough, they'll realize what? I don't have to go until I get old. And then I can get my grandchildren and bring them to church, which is part of the data you just picked up on. I think that could be, like, it could be churches for women, for mothers, and for children, not for fathers. Good point. But that hasn't shown up in the research yet, the father's part. But Christian said, he also said, and this gets kind of dangerous. I said, I know of parents who just drop off their kids because they want them to be a good person, right? So they just drop them off. And they go off and do stuff, and they come pick them up after Sunday school or worship, whatever. What's the signal? I don't have to go. So you go now, and then when you're old enough, you don't have to go. If you have kids and you want them to go, this is what you do. You find a church, you drop them off, and then you come pick them up, right? Because they learn. They get this. They learn what you do when you're coming up to an intersection and the light turns yellow and you speed up. They're like, oh, cool. Yellow means speed up. Get through the intersection. They learn. You don't have to teach them that because you're doing it, right? They learn that it's a little silly when you say, I told you stop hitting your sister. Sorry. And they're like, okay, do you not get that you're hitting me right now, telling me to stop hitting my sister? Thanks, Mom. That really makes sense. Okay? I mean, they learn, right? So this is the kind of data that we're coming up with. The power of that family structure, the family system, is huge, and it carries more weight than anything else that's up there, although all six of these surfaced as really important. Questions or comments? Please. Yep.
Do as I say.
Yep.